Hey everyone, Jose Youngs here with MMAfighting.com, host of the A-Side Live Chat. Just a quick heads up, we did have some technical difficulties with this episode, so no, you are not imagining things. This episode did start rather abruptly and end rather abruptly, but we got almost all of the episode squared away ahead of UFC 252 on Saturday. Again, apologies for the little technical difficulties with this episode, but we hope to see you back in future episodes.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
First question. I'm going to keep it easy. First question is, Jose, what is that movie called where the guy fights in a Thai prison?
Oh, I believe it's called A Prayer Before Dawn. I don't remember the actor's name, but if anyone watches Peaky Blinders, The Green Room, or the Black Mirror episode Hang the DJ, it's that male character. It's the main protagonist. He plays Jonathan, I want to say. John in Peaky Blinders. He is an English man who goes to jail in Thailand for, I think he has drugs or something. He gets arrested, and he's a former kickboxer. So in Thai jail, you can join the pro team, and then fight rather than spend your time just in a Thai jail. So it's his ordeals in that, and I highly recommend it. There's almost no dialogue, and all if there is dialogue, it's all in Thai, or when he speaks this in English. So one of my favorite Muay Thai movies. It's probably second after Ong Bak. So 10 out of 10. Give it a watch if you haven't.
All right. Is this what prompted this question? Is this a new movie or?
No, I think I talked to someone asked a question about it in a post-fight show, and I couldn't remember the name of it, and I looked it up after. But definitely give it. I think he's the main character in what's that biker show that everyone was obsessed with? Sons of Anarchy. Actor's name? He plays King Arthur. He was supposed to be the lead, but then he bailed for whatever reason. So, but give it a watch. I highly, highly. If you like Muay Thai, specifically like watching Muay Thai in like dimly lit, cigar smoke filled rooms, watch that movie. Because in my opinion, that's the best way to watch Muay Thai.
All right. Best way to watch Muay Thai. Well, also, Showtime actually has a documentary about the same thing. The promise of getting out of prison through winning a fight. So it is a real thing, and there's a documentary about it. So
you can shorten your prison sentence if you do really well in the fight scene, or?
Yes.
I think so. And he goes, it's like, obviously there's some drama to it. Like, he gets really hurt, and they're like, you can't fight anymore. And he's like, I have to fight. I have to get out. And then he has like a lacerated liver or something crazy like that. It's also, keep in mind, it is jail. So if you're uncomfortable with certain things, don't watch it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Noted.
Anyway, but give it a watch if you like good Muay Thai movies. All
right. Okay. So the next question is, let's pull one from the fans here. From the comments from Terrence Leverett. Can you read this? No? Okay.
I can't see it.
All right. Do you think it would take Bellator having a 165 division before we get one in the UFC? It took Bellator to crown a 125 woman champ before we got one in the UFC. Your thoughts?
That is an interesting question. I don't think the Bellator would be the one to pull the trigger on that. Like an official champion, I doubt they'll be the ones to pull the trigger, because aren't the weight classes regulated by the athletic commissions, if I'm not mistaken?
Oh, sorry. I'm just laughing at the random noises in the background.
Sure. That's my cat opening and closing kitchen cabinets, so that's what I live with.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah. Continue.
No, the commissions actually don't necessarily. It is actually up to the promoter. The only reason why I'm saying that is because Elite XC's lightweight division was 160 pounds instead of 155. Right. So because
I remember the failed card at the end that was canceled was supposed to be Eddie Alvarez and Nick Diaz at 165, right?
160.
160. That's right.
So
you're not wrong.
Yeah. So that's why. I actually don't think, I don't know if the UFC is ever going to do a 165 division. Obviously, they kind of need to, but then they would have to do a 55 65 75.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, the only reason why it's not happening is just because they don't want to deal with the paperwork.
Yeah, if, as also, long as...
Like the shifting of the weight classes, you know?
Sure,
I
sure.
I also think just like the way Dana White thinks, it's like if Bellator does it, I understand that like Bellator did 125 women's first, but I feel like that was just kind of a natural progression of the sport. I feel like if Bellator does a 165, Dana White's just adamantly going to be so much more against doing it because he doesn't want to be seen as like following what Bellator is doing.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I also think Dana White just doesn't want to do it because so many people want it, which makes Dana White want it less because that's how his brain operates for whatever reason. If someone goes, I want 165, he's like, nope. And someone says, I don't want Greg Hardy to fight in the co-main event. He's like, well, he is. So that's just how his brain operates.
Yeah, no, especially if more and more people keep saying something. So like we kept saying the small cage is better and he insisted that there's no difference. And the more people insisted that there was a difference, the more he insisted there wasn't a difference. So,
like when they, what was it, the UFC in Chicago, Alex and I were working at Fansided at the time. That's the fight card he kept talking about wanting to bring back the old weigh-ins on the stage where everyone gets up sucked out on stage.
Yeah.
So Alex and I asked every single fighter at Media Day, like, what do you prefer?
Yeah.
And they were all like, like, why would you want to go back to the old way? It's so stupid. Mm-hmm. Like, Megan Anderson just went hard in the paint on it. The only one that said she didn't care was Carla Esparza, but she barely cuts weight as is because she fights at 115. She should probably be an atom weight. And then Dana White was up on the stage saying, like, everyone wants to go back. And then I was like, who? And he wouldn't give me a name.
Nobody
wants to go back.
All right. Let's get one from this past weekend here.
I can see the questions now.
Yeah.
So you want me to read them? Do you want to keep reading them?
You can read this one.
All right. From Mark. So Kiwi_MMANZ, longtime commenter. What's next for Olenek? Does he get the loser of JDS and Rosenstreich to rack up his 60th professional win? Hashtag the A-side. Oh, my God. I forgot. All week before that fight, I kept saying he had 50 pro fights. But for some reason, the fact that he has 60 baffles me. But what is Dexter Olenek? Sure, that makes sense to me. What do you guys think?
I think I'm going to go good old Gus. I mean, he's coming off a loss as well. That's another big name for him. I feel like after Derek Lewis, like you can't just like go back to fighting no names.
I like that. Yeah. I like Gus. That's a good one because maybe... That's and you're going after a smaller heavyweight.
Mm-hmm.
Someone also, if I'm not mistaken, Gustafson weighed significantly more than Olenek did during their last two weigh-ins.
Yeah, 240 or something, right?
Yeah, and Olenek is like 227 or something wild like that. So if Gustafson wants to stay heavyweight, I'm all for it. Or if you want to keep with this theme of smaller heavyweights, maybe OSP. He's coming off that loss to Ben Rothwell. I would like him to fight Ben Rothwell. Rothwell called him out. Ben Rothwell called him out after their wins at Jacksonville. But I think Ben Rothwell just got a fight matched up. I can't remember who he's fighting off the top of his head. If Augusto Sakai loses to Overeem, maybe Augusto Sakai, that would be his first loss in the UFC in a while, I think. And Overeem already beat him. So there's a lot of fights for Olenek to take. But I think there needs to be a few fights that need to play out before we can fantasy match make.
Okay. That's fair. I actually do... I agree with everything you just said.
I like the guy. I forgot Gus was even fought a heavyweight. So I like that fight a lot, actually. It's two smaller heavyweights throwing down.
Yeah, no, I like Rothwell. That's a good one, actually, because...
couple grapplers.
Yeah, and just a couple grapplers with, like, a lot of pride in...
Yeah.
In their grappling, so
two grapplers with like it'd be the Ezekiel choke versus the Gogo choke, and two heavyweights that have some of the most fights on the roster.
Yeah,
like I think when Ben Rothwell was on the A side, he said he fought Tim Sylvia when he was like 2-0, and then he fought Travis Fulton like two or three times. Like if you fought Travis Fulton back in the day, you know you've been around for a long time.
Exactly. All right, next question. We'll do one for this week.
From Sam Harris 916, another longtime commenter. Also, his profile is a photo of Danny Phantom pre turning into the Phantom. So much respect. If Sean O'Malley wins against Chito Vera, do you think Jimmy Rivera would be a good fight to make next? And do you think if Stipe wins, if DC wins, Stipe retires? So two questions, Esther. I'll start with you. If Sugar Sean O'Malley beats Chito Vera on Saturday night in the co-main event of UFC 252, do you like the Jimmy Rivera fight?
Mm. Yeah, sure.
Why not?
I don't know.
I think he needs a bigger name.
Yeah. Well, no, Jimmy is going off a really big win.
He is.
So, yeah, sure. I just feel like it's kind of a... maybe I'm just thinking of how comical the stare down is going to look.
Alex, what do you think? Do you like the Jimmy Rivera matchup, or do you want someone else?
I know he's, like, pretty high ranked. He's, like, top 10, right? But, like, I really think that Sugar Sean, they're going to... After this fight, I feel like this was like the, oh, we're trying to like build him up the right way kind of fight. And then like next, I think we need to kind of skyrocket him a little bit. I want to see him fight like a bigger name.
Yeah, I think it's going to depend entirely on how he wins. If he goes out there and beats Chito Vera in like 90 seconds with another knockout, then give him a huge fight. But if he goes out there and it's like a back and forth war and he squeaks out a split decision, maybe you give him someone lower down the totem pole. But I think John Dodson is fighting Marab. I think if Dodson wins, I think Dodson's been a phenomenal barometer for prospects. Like if you look at the people he's lost to, it's like Marlon Vera, Peter Yan, who's the current champion. DJ's beat him twice. Like if you beat John Dodson, you are a legitimate contender, but then you give him guys like Nathaniel Wood as a stepping stone, and Nathaniel Wood clearly has something to do. So if Dodson wins against even Marab, like Marab's called him out a million times. You keep hearing about Sugar Sean's grappling. No one's going to test him in that division like Marab, who has the record for most takedowns in a single fight at bantamweight. I think he's also one of only two fighters in the UFC to have double-digit takedowns in two separate fights. Or technically, Song Yadong beat Marlon Vera in Jacksonville. I know everyone thinks Chito won that fight, even though he lost. But Song Yadong technically got the W. He doesn't have a fight booked up, so I wouldn't hate that fight either.
That would be exciting. Really exciting. I really think that if you... No, Marab is one of those guys that nobody wants to fight, so...
Yeah.
That might be a difficult one to book, but I think you could probably get the Song Yadong fight.
And 100%. And I think if the thing going for Marab is I think Sugar Sean and Marab are ranked 14-15, so they're right there. If they both win and bump up like two or three spots and they're sitting at 10-11 or 9-10, ranking-wise, it makes sense. If Sugar Sean wants to show off his grappling, it makes sense. The history's already there because Marab called him out, and Sugar Sean said, Brian Kelleher can fight Marab, and the winner gets to be my number one fan. I really liked that. That tweet. So, but there's a lot of fun fights for Sugar Sean to make. It just depends on how he wins, I think.
Second part of that question.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. If DC wins, does Stipe Miocic retire? Alex, what do you think?
I don't think so. But now I'm like, well, what does he do now? I don't know.
Right.
I haven't really been paying attention like what he's been saying as far as like interviews and stuff. So I don't know if he's been hinting at it. It's certainly not out of the question. Maybe it's a retirement, and then in a year he's gonna come back. I don't know. That's always an option. That's a third career choice that I think people forget about.
Esther, what do you think?
No. He's not gonna retire.
I think the answer is no. He recently did an interview with James Lynch, a friend of the site, and one of the few men who beat me on Between the Links. And he said, Stipe said he doesn't plan on retiring. He doesn't plan on retiring, but that could all change, of course, depending on how that fight plays out. But I think regardless, win or lose, he fights Francis Ngannou next. It's either for a vacant title or it's a title defense. I think it just depends on if he wins or loses against DC.
Well, do you think he's going to win?
I don't know. I haven't even made up my mind yet. That fight is so close, and both fights played out so differently that, like, after the second Kane fight, like when Kane JDS happened, you kind of knew how the third fight was going to play out. But because DC and looked so competitive in the second fight for a while before succumbing to the body shots, it's not like Stipe dominated him for five rounds like Kane did the JDS in their second fight. So that's tough. I think, but DC has also said that he abandoned the wrestling that was working out for him before. Because like Stipe has one of those faces, like Esther, you've photographed a million fights. There are fighters like BJ Penn who just don't get bruised at all. But then Stipe is the guy, you punch him once and he gets a bruise immediately. And he's, DC said after three punches, every punch he would throw, he would just leave a mark, and it just kind of, he just kind of fell in love with striking and he abandoned the wrestling, and that ended up being his downfall. So if DC shows up and wrestles him, maybe, but Stipe did knock him out pretty violently in that second fight. So I don't know. I haven't made up my mind yet.
All right. Let's go to some questions about this Bellator this past weekend. Is Chandler to the UFC a possibility? From Ganandra Thapa.
Ah, man. Esther, you watched Bellator 243 this weekend, and you also recorded the post-fight press conferences, so you watched them all, so did I. But I'll start with you. Where do you think Michael Chandler goes from here? This was a topic on Between the Links, so people pretty much know my take on it, but what is your take on it?
I think yes, because he's done pretty much everything he can do in Bellator, and he was very complimentary in the post-fight to working with Bellator and how Bellator had built his career. I mean, he's been, you know, working around Scott Coker and even before that for a while, because he actually fought on an undercard in St. Louis for Strikeforce. Way long ago. And when I met him, I remember Tyron Woodley came up to me and was like, look out for this guy. I was like, okay. So... I think he's done everything he's done he can do in Bellator, and he's going to want to see what UFC has to offer. So I think he should go ahead and make that move. You know, no hard feelings, just got to go.
Who do you want to see him fight first if he hops over to the UFC?
Ooh, I had one in mind. Who did I say I wanted him to fight first? Shoot, I already forgot.
Well, while you're thinking about it, Alex, where do you think Michael Chandler goes? To UFC, Bellator? Does he go to one to get that rubber match with Eddie Alvarez? There's a lot of options out there for Michael Chandler.
Yeah, I don't know. I wish I knew what he was making right now, because then I think that would be obviously more transparent to figure out like where he stacks as far as like what UFC fighters are getting paid. And it's possible that it's not even going to compare. I mean, I think a lot of people have gone to Bellator and gotten way better deals. Does he have the star power that like the UFC would probably want from him at this point? Is he past the peak? I don't know. It's always a possibility, but I guess it's just, it sounds like it's all about the bottom line for him. So I can't blame him, though.
At this point, I think you're right, especially because he does have his adopted son. Years ago, I think Michael Chandler to the UFC would be a no-brainer, because he is super competitive. Damon Martin just had that interview with Daniel Cormier where he's like, I think I'm the most competitive person in MMA. Michael Chandler is way up there. He's down to fight anybody, just because when he was the champion, he's like, I'll fight anyone. I don't care about super fights. I'll fight... Brent Primus in Madison. Remember that Madison Square Garden card? They had all those super fights. And then Michael Chandler, the company man, just fought the number one contender. Didn't need a super fight. He just wanted to compete. Didn't care who it was against. And then his post-fight interview, he was like, MMA isn't about the competition. It's about going out there in front of millions and just competing. And so if he wants competition, come over to the UFC or go over to the UFC, because I don't think he has anything left to prove in Bellator unless he gets that rematch with Pitbull. But Pitbull's tied up with the Featherweight Grand Prix at the moment. I think he needs to come over to the UFC and fight Anthony Pettis right away. Anthony Pettis is a former champion. They've had to have been champions simultaneously at some point in their careers. Anthony Pettis is going to fight for the title anytime soon. He's a super exciting fighter. I think that's a really good fight night headliner for when they come back to the Apex at some point. Or he could fight Charles Oliveira, because I'm not even looking at that as Michael Chandler deserves Charles Oliveira. Charles Oliveira deserves a big name, and no one in the top five is going to fight Charles Oliveira right now. It's kind of in that odd spot where he could beat anyone, but he's not a big name and can't really speak English, so no one wants to really risk their rankings or a fight that's not going to sell well. So Chandler v. Charles Oliveira, Anthony Pettis, or Dan Hooker, one of those three, okay, in my mind, unless Cowboy wants to drop down.
Well, we got Watch My 666 says Dariush or Hooker.
That's Benil Dariush is what AK keeps saying, but I like that fight, but I don't want to reward Benil Dariush with a big name after missing weight. That's just, if he had made weight and got that another knockout, sure. Benil Dariush, maybe one more fight, and then you can fight Michael Chandler. He also knocked someone out that wasn't even ranked. And Scott Holzman after missing weight. And I like Beneil Dariush a lot. He's a very, very nice individual. He's a really good interview. He's a very well-spoken man. The way he breaks down fights is very, very – he speaks on your level. Like if he knows you're a high level – if he knows you know a lot about MMA, he can throw out words that knowing you'd understand. But if you know nothing about MMA, he can describe a fight and you can follow along perfectly. I just – maybe one more fight for Beneil before he gets some Michael Chandler, Charles Oliveira-type fighter. I want to see Beneil Dariush rematch Alexander Hernandez.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because after their – or Drew Dober, one of those two. Because Drew Dober just beat Hernandez.
I want to see the Alexander Hernandez rematch.
I agree. Mike Heck hates that fight.
Oh.
And I like it. The only other thing I would say is if they want to do the Dober fight, they could put it on the undercard of Gaethje-Habib. Because Habib and Dariush are obviously, and Gaethje are all managed by Ali. So they could throw, and then Dober and Gaethje are training partners. So they would all be peaking together at the same time heading into that fight.
All right. Next question, we'll keep in the Bellator theme here.
What's next for Valerie, and will we ever see her in the UFC? Well, the second part of the question, probably not anytime soon, but we're going to use this opportunity to speak about Valerie Lareda, because Alex, I know you have a lot of thoughts on the matter. I, a man, probably have less to say about this matter, or what I have to say matters far less, because we've had the post-fight show, we've had What the Heck, we've had Between the Links, and on MMA Fighting, we have not had one female voice talk about the response to Valerie Lareda or the build-up to Valerie Lareda's fight. So, since I am the only male on the show right now, I will let you two give your take on it. Alex, I'll start with you, because during that fight, we were slacking, and you're like, we knew you were going to have some things to say on the matter. So, the floor is yours.
In my head, I was thinking I was going to come up with like a written statement so that I could gather my thoughts. But, you know, it's frustrating because the way that women have been promoted in MMA has been focused on their looks and everything. And that's what gets guys to watch it, you know, and a lot of female fighters will tell you whatever. I don't care as long as people are watching. I don't care why they're watching. But then they love to turn around and slam it in your face when you use it yourself. You know, you're not allowed to promote yourself in that way. It has to be through somebody else's eyes. And that's what's just so frustrating. Like, everybody loved to comment on Paige VanZant and how hot she was or whatever. And then as soon as she started posting stuff on Instagram, I don't know, you could say flaunting it. I wouldn't use that word, but putting herself out there in that way, then people just wanted to, you know, slam her down for it. And it's like, okay, you can't have it both ways. So, like, I don't understand where the disconnect is.
Yeah, I would agree. You can't have the only thing, you know, it's because Valerie's young too, so she's not gonna say these things just yet. She's like 22 or something. The only thing I would have added to her statement, because I know after her fight she had said like, look, I just want to make it so that girls who want to be a girly girl can still, you know, be considered, you know, badass fighters and stuff like that. And I also wanted her to add just then, also, if you don't want to be. If you don't care, you know, if that doesn't matter to you, you should also be able to be considered. Basically, the same leeway we give to men, you know, because you think that we don't judge the male fighters by how they look. Of course we judge them. Everyone judges the male fighters by how they look. Also, Have you ever seen, how many male fighters do you know that shave their armpits? Probably most of them.
I've never thought about it, but you're probably right.
They care about how they look, you know? They care about how they look. A lot of them tan, you know, that kind of stuff. So they just don't say it and they don't, you know, put it out on social media or whatever. But, you know, it's all part of it. It's all part of the marketing. You can't say that it matters to market yourself well. And then when somebody does it, you're marketing yourself wrong, you know, unless you're like actively insulting a group of people or anything like that. There's really no wrong way to market yourself.
And you can't, it's like, there's this spectrum, right? You're like either hyper feminine or you're too muscular. It's like, you have to find this balance of like being the pretty girl. But if you look too muscular, people call you a man, like people did with Amanda Nunes. Like, I'm sorry, where are we supposed to go? Like, why don't you tell me what level of femininity you're comfortable with so that you can watch me fight in a cage? Like, it's just so irrelevant when you put it in terms like that. It's just like, it sounds ridiculous. Like, I'm fighting in a cage. You guys want to, like, talk about that? It's kind of crazy. Like,
yeah.
No, let's talk about how, like, how bulging my muscles are, how gorgeous my hair is. Like, just, yeah, it's insane.
So, what do you think of fellow fighters, fellow female fighters that take issue with Valerie and comments? I think Macy Chieson, I think it was commented something like that, and even Valerie Lareda's opponent said a few things, and Valerie Lareda said, like, oh, you said I was demoralizing the sport. Well, look what I just did to your face. So what do you make of her fellow fighters' comments?
It's a real shame. I mean, I think women putting other women down is a real problem. But I hate when people say, like, oh, well, it gives men an excuse to do that. No, it doesn't. It doesn't give anybody an excuse to do that. You know, just because another woman is saying it doesn't make it right for anybody else to say it. I wish we could all just kind of get on board and support each other, but we realize that we're all on the same team and we're all fighting for the same exact thing, which is equality. However you obtain it, that's your prerogative, but you can't keep shooting people down. You know, that's not helping anybody.
What's unfortunate is people don't understand. I mean, they're not in the same weight class, Chieson and Lareda, but people don't understand that just by nature, unless you identify as a friend or a training partner with that person, most fighters can't stand other fighters, especially if they're close to their weight class. They'll say, like, oh, yeah, fuck that guy or fuck that girl, because it's always just kind of you always think about maybe one day I might face them. And that's always going to be in the back of their mind. So whenever I ask fighters, like, oh, what do you think of so-and-so? They'd always be like just kind of squinting their eyes at them, you know. So there's you have to remember that their fighters are not going to necessarily support each other in that way. And unfortunately, I feel like the fans definitely make it harder for women to support each other. With being so vocal against someone like Valerie, you're going to have other fighters join in, basically, so that they can also be considered by this group of people to be honorable humans. So
it's almost like the feeling that there's not enough to go around. There's not enough attention for female fighters to go around, so they feel like they have to compete for whatever there is. And that's what, like, I always bring up the example, like, when I studied in college, like, my major was heavily dominated by males in the industry, and I never felt like I was competing against the men in my class. I felt like I was competing against the other women because there were only a few women doing it, you know, and that's kind of how I feel that this works as well in MMA. It's unfortunate, but...
Yeah, that is unfortunate because you're right, because when I first started, there was two female photographers, and everyone's always like, what do you think about the other photographer? I'm like, why does it matter? There are six other men here. Mm-hmm. Why are you not asking me about the other guys that I'm shooting next to? So
exactly.
Yes, it is a disappointing thing all around. In my opinion, which holds less water than my current co-host, I never understood male or females shooting down fighters' skills in general, especially when they're close to the same weight class. Like, say Macy Chieson and Valerie Lareda both fought at 125, and they both happen to be a Bellator. Or say, scratch that, maybe Paige VanZant and Valerie, and someone's like, they're not going to fight anytime soon just based on their records and how long they've been in the sport, but that could be far further down the road. Paige VanZant goes out there and says, she sucks, she's this, she's that. I'm like, if you're shooting her skill set down and you fight and you beat her, you beat a bum.
Yeah.
If she beats you, you lost to a bum.
Good point.
I never, male or female, I never understood fellow fighters shooting down opponents' skill sets in their weight class, because that just gives your haters an excuse. You either beat a bum or you lost to a bum. But if you, like Gaethje, is like, Khabib is the best fighter on planet Earth. It is going to be the hardest thing I've ever done. Daniel Cormier said the same thing about Jon Jones. They might not like each other, but Daniel Cormier was like, Jon Jones is the greatest fighter who ever lived. And then if he beat him, it's that much bigger of a deal. If he said Jon Jones sucks and then he beats him, well, he sucked.
Yeah. What
so I never, I never understood that argument for that fighters make. But I'm not going to try to input on the male versus female conversation because I've never experienced that from your side of the world. It's just disappointing all around. But I will say, a lot of my friends on Instagram that follow MMA or are fringe fans that are female are huge Valerie Lareda fans now, and they all shared that clip of her saying, like, I demoralized your face, I broke your face, when she was, like, visibly shaking up there. Like, she seemed out of breath. Like, Sajara Eubanks commented on Instagram, and she was like, why is she so out of breath? And then all the comments were like, she's angry. She's like shaking. She's like shaking with rage. You could see how much of a relief she was. So she gained a lot of fans just from my friends.
Yeah.
After her words.
Yeah. Actually, Mike Heck interviewed her, and that's going to be on What the Heck this week. And there's some, it was really good answers to all of that. So I can't wait for y'all to hear it. But let's, I'm going to go ahead to, let me move this one.
From Ollie, another longtime comment. Do you think the UFC giving Cody Garbrandt a 125 title shot, the worst thing they could have done for the flyweight division, and who do you think wins? Well, two few things. I'm not even going to even think about that fight because what's it, all the way in November? Like, remember when Gilbert Burns was supposed to fight Kamaru Usman in July, and then it fell out like 11 days? It's hard in this climate to think that far ahead of fights. Because remember, Habib and Tony were supposed to fight in New York, and then Tony and Gaethje were supposed to fight in NorCal in April, and that got pushed to May. Like, it's hard for me to think about November. But in a perfect world, this fight happens. I want to see Cody make weight. I want to see Figueiredo make weight because he's had issues making weight. Cody Garbrandt's never made 125, and then we could talk about it. But Esther, your thoughts?
Yeah, kind of. Why do they keep doing that? They're sabotaging 125 by doing this.
Yep.
There are so many 125 contenders. There's Brandon Moreno, for example. But so I just don't think that they need to do this because it makes it seem like there isn't enough talent at flyweight when there clearly is.
Alex, your thoughts?
I actually disagree. I think that this is probably the best thing that they could do for the flyweight division as it stands right now. The names that are coming up in the top five, they're not big names. They're not household names. They're not, I don't want to say they're not anybody, but in the way that things stand right now, they're not. And Cody Garbrandt is a name. And if they're trying to build up the flyweight division, at least in terms of popularity and people watching it, I don't think it's the worst thing that they could have done. Yeah, I think it's shitty, and I'd be friggin' pissed if I'm Brandon Moreno or Alex Perez or whoever else is coming up. Yeah, that's frustrating, but I'm not. And I'm, I'm me, and I don't think it's the worst thing that they could have done.
I'm going to be in the middle, and I'm going to say it will be great if Cody stays at 125. Mm-hmm. And it will be terrible if he wins and then goes back to 135. He knocks off a champion and then bails. Like, if Cody Garbrandt says, I will stay at 125 and fight contenders, awesome. But if he pulls a GSP, wins, and dips out, it's not going to be great because they just lost their current champion, who Guilherme Cruz is on the A-side last week. He says Figueiredo could be the next big thing in Brazil. Still lives there, doesn't speak English, has a super fascinating backstory where he's worked all these odd jobs. He could be the next big deal. He said Amanda Nunes doesn't really connect with the Brazilian fans because she lives in America. She wore the U.S. soccer team shirt at the media days and press conferences. Figueiredo's their next guy. Cody Garbrandt knocks him off and then leaves. They lose their current champ, and then they lose the biggest name they have. If Cody stays, great. I think Cody personally should have stayed at 135 and fought Sugar Sean if he wins, because if they want a big fight, that's a big fight. And then I think Perez should have fought Figueiredo. And then Askarov should have rematched Moreno because they fought to a draw in Mexico. But that's just me. If Cody wins and stays, that is awesome for the flyweight division.
Don't think it's going to be awesome if Figgy just knocks him out?
Oh, if Figueiredo goes out there and crushes Cody Garbrandt, I think that's the best case scenario for the flyweight division. But that's, I don't want to even think about that fight until they make weight and we're in November, because the current climate is so unpredictable.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just, Figueiredo's the god of war, so.
Yeah. He is. Figueiredo's a bad, bad dude. I like Joe B a lot, but that was hard. That was a mauling. That was a bully mugging someone in a locker. Manel Cape, yes, I wish, selfishly, Manel Cape, former Ryzen champ, that Esther has shot many a time. Selfishly, I wanted Perez to fight Manel Cape on the same card as Figueiredo and Cody Garbrandt, and then Moreno and Askarov rematch. So we would have had flyweight. Because Moreno Perez is already booked for the undercard of Figueiredo and Garbrandt, unless they want to scrap that fight and remake the Manel Cape Perez fight. Because I think Manel Cape is awesome, but he shouldn't get a title shot right away. Beating Perez deserves that. Then you would have had six flyweight fights. and I can't remember who it was. They wanted all flyweights on the main card. That's how you build the division.
Yeah, I definitely think that they have to include at least one more other flyweight fight on the main card and then one other in the prelims for that particular card. If you wanted to build a division, people have to see the other fighters in the division. So,
Alex, your thoughts?
I have no more thoughts on this.
All right, we'll Luke Rockhold,
Luke Rockhold versus Chris Weidman from Zakuko Kegi on the site. This seems like a perfect time to do the rematch. How do you see this fight going? I think Casey thought the same thing. I want to see Chris Weidman and Anderson Silva 3. I made my thoughts known on the post-fight show. So, Esther, I'll start with you. You've shot Rockhold everywhere. Strikeforce, UFC, all that. You fought, shot Weidman everywhere. You shot pretty much the entire middleweight division. So what do you think? What's next for these two men?
I would like to see that rematch, although I don't think Luke would want it. Just the same way Weidman doesn't want the Silva rematch. You know, these guys are like, well, I won. I don't want to give the guy a rematch. So
sure.
Chris Weidman versus Anderson Silva does make sense. But so does Luke Rockhold versus Chris Weidman. I actually think Luke and Chris are actually closer in their place in life. And I think that would make a bit more sense than Silva. But, you know, the Silva fight is for the money. You'd be doing it because you'd be earning more money. So.
Oh, yeah. Alex?
Yeah, I think Rockhold versus Weidman probably does bigger numbers. It's just so annoying to me. Like, I'm more annoyed by people coming out of retirement than I am by people getting title shots off of losses. Like, this just is so fresh. Like, I have the phrase comes out of retirement, like, muted on Twitter. Like, I don't want to see it. If Henry Cejudo ever announces it, I won't see it. So somebody please let me know. Like, I just find that very annoying.
I believe Rockhold, I hope I'm getting this right. Rockhold gave an interview to our friends over at Submission Radio. Rockhold says he's down to rematch Weidman if that's what he wants, but he also mentioned Darren Till and Jack Hermanson. Those are the three names he mentioned. He wants someone relevant. I also would not say no to Luke Rockhold versus Anderson Silva, because I'm pretty sure they were champions simultaneously at one point in their career, and I would love that fight that we never got. That, if we're talking about fresh fights, not rematches, don't hate that fight either.
Oh, actually, yeah.
If you come out of retirement, you start, like, making demands. Like, I want Darren Till. Like, okay, let's...
Right.
Like, that's what's
right. Well, Darren Till's out for like 9-12 months with a blown out knee, so he's not gonna be fighting anytime soon. If that fight, I also wouldn't hit Darren Till versus Anderson Silva. They both can speak Portuguese. I mean, the Portuguese media would love that. The Brazilian media would love that. So there's a lot of fun fights for the middleweight division right now.
Yeah. So I'm just gonna bring this one up because we have to address that this is not true.
Mm-hmm. Thoughts on Tai Tuivasa and Tyson Pedro getting cut? I saw Tai Tuivasa from Watch My 666 on the YouTube comments. I saw Tai comment that, but I haven't really seen anything about it, and I hadn't heard of Tyson Pedro. I know Tyson Pedro hadn't fought since losing to Shogun, if I'm not mistaken, right down in, was it Adelaide? That part. Yeah, Adelaide. So I hadn't heard that one, but that's not true, you say?
Tai Tuivasa said he was kidding.
Yeah.
So not a very funny joke, but... Nope. A joke nonetheless. So just letting y'all know it was not true.
Tai Tuivasa's name came up a lot during the... I saw on the YouTube comments and Twitter for post-fight shows and stuff when talking about prospects brought up too quickly after Edmund's loss. Because he came up pretty quickly and got thrown in against JDS in a main event and lost. But he looks good in that fight, but he's lost 2 cents. So, but... Good thing they're not cut. Glad they're not cut.
Okay.
Ty's a lot of fun.
I wish Ty fought Justin Willis. I wish Justin Willis didn't get cut solely for that fight.
All right. This is a fun one from the Twitters.
Ooh. From Kiwi_MMANZ. It's another comment. Hashtag the A side. What's the most ridiculous fact you know? You don't know how or why you remember. You just do. Is this directed at all of us?
I guess so. Yeah.
I've got one. Okay.
Shoot.
The original flavor for the filling inside of Twinkies was banana flavored.
Oh.
Ooh.
And that's come up in a trivia night before, and I felt like a friggin' genius. There's no reason to know that fact. It was on like a Snapple cap, probably.
Huh.
Esther, what's your most ridiculous fact?
I don't have one. You know, I wish I had some kind of weird, ridiculous fact. Just trivia, but I'm really bad at trivia night. I the only thing I'm good at trivia night is the part where, you know, you like name that tune or whatever.
Sure, sure.
And like random history stuff, but yeah, I just don't have any. Fezzik wants to say hi.
Oh, hey. I think the two, I have two. One of them is just ludicrous and is fun, and the other one is pretty mind-blowing, in my opinion. The ludicrous one is the state of Ohio is the only state that doesn't share a letter with the word mackerel. I think that's always a fun one when people ask for a random fact. Right, see both
really
of your faces.
Random.
Because you think about it, and you're like, huh, that's a thing. and then I was told this like in elementary school. If you fold a paper, I think 104 times, this over and over and over and over, it is thicker than the observable universe mathematically.
I thought that was it was impossible to fold.
It is impossible, okay. But if it is, like, I think you can't, like, technically it's possible depending on the size of the sheet of paper and the power you can generate. Like, if you had a crane folding a football-sized field piece of paper, probably, because you could be able to flatten it. But if you fold it 104 times, so that would be basically 2n representing the number of folds, would be 2 to the 140th power, which would be a yotameter, which is pretty, which is massive. So yeah, if you fold the paper 104 times, it is bigger mathematically than the observable universe. And that is my ridiculous fact.
What is the observable universe?
What we are able to see with telescopes in the human eyes.
Okay.
So if you fold a paper 104 times, it is bigger than that, mathematically.
Okay.
Oh, I did learn something yesterday that I did not know. That college basketball jersey numbers don't use 6, 7, 8, or 9.
Yeah, I know, because you can only, because the refs use
their hand signals.
Yeah. So if 15 gets a foul, they hold up a 1 and a 5. So so 5 is the most digits you can use on one hand. Yeah. So they can't go like 1, 7.
Yeah.
Also, I had read,
although,
speaking of basketball,
although in Asia we count to 10 in one hand.
Oh wow!
We'll show us that.
I also read somewhere that in North Korea their rules in basketball are just outrageous. Like in the last 30 seconds, like a 3-pointer is worth like 5 points. Or something crazy like that, and they're only allowed like a limited number of dunks a game. Like, it's basically not basketball, but they call it basketball. It's basically so if you're blowing someone out and you're down like 50, you can just come back and make it exciting in the last minute. It's pretty wild. So I'm gonna go look up the actual rules. There's like a 4-point shot too.
All right. So I don't have a cat opening and closing cabinets here, but just
you're haunted.
Yeah, house haunted. This is kind of a weird one, and I'm not really sure.
What? Oh, interesting. From hashtag number one heart surgeon. I think that's an Office reference. What is the ideal role that a manager should play in the fighter's career? Seems like some managers like to use the fighters as personal mouthpieces, take control of their Twitter accounts, and involve them in personal vendettas. Does this come along with the territory of MMA, or is this something that should change? Esther, you've been around MMA longer than both of us, or at least been covering the sport longer than both of us. What do you think the role of the manager should be?
This just reminds me of how Gilbert Burns yesterday was complaining that he's like, oh, people think that Ali runs my Twitter. And then he's like, if Ali ran my Twitter, let's see how quickly he can delete this. And it was a video. He had face swapped Ali's face.
Oh, I saw that. Yes. Yeah. That is so funny.
On top of a bunch of
I forgot about that.
Like Taylor Swift and some other videos. So, manager's role. You know, in boxing, managers are their mouthpieces. Actually,
mm-hmm.
You'll find managers and coaches tend to do most of the talking, and I actually don't mind it. I don't know if necessarily it's ideal. I would say it depends on the fighter, right? So if you're a fighter that maybe is more quiet and someone who should have kind of an air of mystery around you, say like Fedor, you should have somebody else speak for you. Same with Brock Lesnar, you know, somebody else should speak for you. I don't agree necessarily with a manager's like running a fighter's Twitter or social media, especially without being forthcoming about it, especially if they start beefs. Because then, you know, I mean, it's not genuine, and also it might not. If that's not how the fighter feels, you know, you're just kind of dragging people into this. But overall, I actually do think that it is kind of the manager's role. It's a little different in MMA because you'll find managers with like much larger stables.
Yeah,
that's not really the case in other combat sports.
Unless you count professional wrestling,
right?
When you come out with like a swarm of wrestlers that you're quote unquote representing. But Alex, what do you think the role of managers should be?
Yeah, I don't know how it works in other sports as much, but it doesn't really bother me if they want to be that mouthpiece. I agree with Esther with the social media. If you want to put something out on their social media, then you need to put like a little dash with like your initials that like this came from you.
Yeah.
I think
Stipe does that.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I just think with like MMA, like it's so, we all know it's so much more important to be a personality than it is anything else. And if you're just not good at it naturally, then sometimes you do need somebody else to speak on your behalf. If that manager wants to make money off of you, they're just going to take it into their own hands. I don't know. It doesn't bother me. But again, as long as they're doing it with the fighter's permission, then whatever, fair game.
I agree that if fighters are uncomfortable on the mic and this and that, then their manager should be their mouthpiece, as long as the manager doesn't make it all about them. Mm. Like if they start picking, like if a manager starts picking beef with specific fighters or other managers, and then it's just like, is this about your fighter or is this about you?
Yeah, when Ali and Abe Kawa are kind of going at it, and you're like,
yeah,
through other accounts, you're like, we know who's talking. It should just be you.
Yeah. Like when Jorge and Kamaru were tweeting at each other, and then everyone's like, so I see Abe and Ali are just yelling at each other through their fighters. But I do think I do like when fighters put the dash. I know when Barack Obama was the president, he would do that because he obviously has a team.
Yeah.
But when he would tweet, it would say like -O, mm-hmm, just to know that it was him. Stipe, I think, does that too. When he put that long thing about how like, I'm not afraid of DC, after every single one, it said like -SM. I like that idea.
We have a random question from a Guilherme Cruz.
So this is about the UFC 4 video game, probably, from Guilherme Cruz from our side. Is Dana White still available? And then someone says, Mikey Batts, in UFC 3, he was playable in like 3 weight classes, LMAO, #UFC4. As far as I know, Dana White is still in there. And as far as I know, he is still in like several weight classes. I just unlocked Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua, so I haven't had an opportunity to play them yet, but they look cool. I've pretty much only been playing a lightweight outside of a few fights as Israel Adesanya, because he seems like built for a video game. But oddly enough, the most fun in terms of like cool moves in the game that I've found is Ask Saris has like the most enjoyable arsenal of kicks and punches and submissions and everything, because he's just so unorthodox.
That doesn't seem odd. It seems actually pretty realistic.
Yeah, it's one of those things where like you don't think, like when you get the video game, you don't want like, oh, I can't wait to play Alex Caceres, but then when you play as him, you're like, wow, this is super fun. He's just not, like his kicking power isn't as hard, his stamina isn't as great, his grappling isn't as great, but like the moves he has are a lot of fun. I've been blasting through UFC 4 the career mode, and you can like make like relationships with fighters, and you have to check your social media and like respond to people and this and that. When I set the record for most title defenses, Anderson Silva was like, congratulations, so and so, for breaking my record. But then, like, Kevin Lee got hurt, and he's like, sorry, I can't fight. And you can be like, you're dodging me. Or you can be like, don't worry, man, I'll run it back in the future. And you could like build your relationships. Me and Alex Caceres and Mark Diakasi are best friends. It's very funny. It's just like the randomness of that game. And Paul Felder hates me because I beat him 5 times.
Wow.
And won't train.
Well,
because I'm at the point where it's like the year 2050. And Paul Felder has fought me 5 times. I beat him every time and I won't train with him.
So your fighter is named Butthead Brown. Alex,
yep.
If you got to name your fighter when you finally get the game, who would you?
Yeah.
What fake name would you give your fighter?
The Sugar Bitch.
The Ooh. Sugar Bitch. What would your nickname be? because like they give you
one at that point. Yeah.
So they give you like a huge list of nicknames to pick from, and that's just so like Bruce Buffer can announce you in the game, and then you even have to make a fake Twitter handle and everything. So mine is the Butcher. So I'm the Butcher Butthead Brown, and my Twitter hashtag, my Twitter handle is Butthead Butcher.
Music to my ears.
Yeah, see, it's a good time. There's no Providence, Rhode Island as a hometown option.
Oh, really?
What?
It's so I was like, excuse me. Just because we don't have any fighters in the UFC doesn't mean we don't exist. So you know where I made Butthead Butcher from? Quakertown, Pennsylvania, because apparently that's more important than Providence, Rhode Island.
Who's from Quakertown, Pennsylvania?
Couldn't tell you. Could not tell you whatsoever, but that is where the 40-0 lightweight champion of the world, Butthead Brown, is from. Also knocked out Robbie Lawler to become a champ at welterweight and lightweight.
Oh my God.
So we're,
that game is the algorithm is absurd in that game too.
So does Dana White look different in every weight class?
No. It's like he's like short for heavyweight, but like tall for like a welterweight.
Oh, so he's just like stretched out?
No. Like compared to other welterweights, he looks taller.
Oh, so he's exactly the same
compared
size.
To heavyweight.
Okay.
Yeah. As far as I know, I haven't played every single weight class yet. I also have not played as any female fighters yet, so I couldn't tell you how they look.
Oh man, PJ.
PJ Higgins, where is Providence? Providence is in Rhode Island, smallest state, longest name. Shortest motto. Should be the first state.
PJ says it doesn't exist.
That's not true. He knows that. Well, where is he from? Chicago? Isn't that where the country stops from the people that are from there? So, yeah. Providence, Rhode Island. Northeast. You'll find it. You know what we have really, really... We have excellent payroll systems in Providence, Rhode Island that we don't need.
Wow. That is, that is another random fact there.
It's not a fact. Triggered in the other room right now.
That is a complete inside joke between me and PJ.
Oh, there we go.
Callan Chukagan from Quakertown, Pennsylvania. Wow. So much respect to Quakertown, Pennsylvania. Then you and Butthead Brown and Callan Chukagan, both contenders from Quakertown, Pennsylvania.
All right. We are winding down here, so I wanted to know if we've missed anything. Trying to.
I don't think so.
I'm going to start going through the comments one more time just to see if I miss anything.
Sure. Sure.
While you're.
And let's talk UFC 4 because that game is.
We can't talk about it because none of us have played it yet. So you'll have. I'll have. When does it come out? I know.
August 14th.
There we go. August 14th. Wait, that's Friday.
A couple days. Yeah.
Friday.
It's a little wild. Like, it's pretty realistic in the fact that I was like 15-0, 14-0 with all knockouts, and they still wouldn't give me a title fight. And I was on like 150 contract. I was like, this is too realistic. I had a KO win over Dustin Poirier, who eventually became champ. And then I was like, well, I was the number one ranked lightweight. Dustin Poirier was the champion. I had already beaten Dustin Poirier earlier on in our careers. Naturally, you'd assume I'd get the title shot. Nope, they give me number 9, Evan Dunham, instead. And then I win and then fall to number 3. It's too realistic.
This is kind of weird. We're getting this kind of question from like 3 different people, and I'm not sure why it's coming up, but...
If both fighters retire Saturday, who is your next heavyweight title matchup? France Ngannou has to be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
On paper, it should be Curtis Blaydes, but he's 0-2 to Francis Ngannou. So I don't know him. Maybe Derek Lewis.
Yeah, that's the suggestion here.
It would have to be the rematch in 5 rounds. Oh my God. If the replay is from the first fight, but in 5 rounds. Alex, what do you think?
I'm just trying to picture in my head both of them retiring like in the octagon in a quiet arena. Like, I'm retiring. And the other guy's like, no, I would be. I'm also retiring.
They put their gloves down together.
Yeah, I'm just trying to imagine. What did you think about Javier Mendez saying that if DC wins, he doesn't think DC will retire?
Money talks, obviously, and DC, I'm sure, would not say no to huge monetary benefits coming his way in the contract. I still think there's only three names he'd come out of retirement for. Two of them will never happen. Those would be Fedor and Brock Lesnar. And the third would be John Jones, which I would give maybe a 33% chance of happening. But if John Jones and the UFC aren't on the best of terms right now, I don't know if they'd open the – if they back the Brinks truck up for a third fight between those two.
Well, that one's hard because I'm not really even sure I never seem to know the status of John Jones, whether or not he's eligible to fight.
Sure, that's very true. That's a good point. I also think it would depend on how the fight plays out. If he goes out there and crushes Stipe like he did the first fight and comes out unscathed, maybe. If he has a fight like Alexander Gustafsson, where it's just like back and forth war, he's all beat up, he has concussions and everything, and he goes home and his eye is swollen shut and he sees his family, I don't think he'll fight again, even if he wins. But so I think it would depend on how he wins, if he wins.
Actually, that's fair. I do think that if he somehow knocks out Stipe in the first round, then for sure he would probably feel the itch to keep fighting and probably will call out Jones. If not, if he's beat up, he's probably going to look at his kids and want to stop doing that.
Hey guys, Jose Youngs here again, host of the A-Side Live Chat. Just want to say apologies again for the technical issues with this episode. We hope you enjoyed it nonetheless ahead of UFC 252 on Saturday night, and we hope to see you back in future episodes.